Well, you know, math underpins popular music in some pretty fundamental ways. There are predictable intervals between notes that make music sound good, and a mathematical relationship between chords that fit into a particular key. Musicians count in when they're about to play a song together and keep time so group performance doesn't fall apart. And those are just a few, some very basic observations about timing, numbers, and music and math. Our next guest loves to explore music through a mathematical lens, and he's co-written a song that is preoccupied with fractals. He'll present the song and a paper about that at a conference next month in Virginia. Jason Brown is a professor and chair of the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Dalhousie University. Jason Brown, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you, Preston.
Great to be here. I'm so eager to hear some of the music that we've been talking about. You've been talking about this with my colleague, Alex. I didn't get to hear the music yet, so we'll get to that in a moment. But what do you mean? What is the term fractal? What does that mean?
A fractal is a mathematical structure that's arisen over the last 50 years mainly, and it's something that occurs quite often in nature, and it's an object, a geometric object, that for which pieces of it look like the whole thing, just scaled down. So, for instance, if you took a piece of broccoli, it looks very much like the whole stalk of broccoli, and if you had no background, you'd be hard-pressed to tell whether it's the entire broccoli or just a single piece of it. And if you took a little piece of that, you'd still have the same problem. Things like branches of trees. You take a branch of a tree, it could look like the whole tree. And you take a sub-branch, it again could look like the whole tree or just the branch. And so this appears in things like lightning, coastlines, the outline of a mountain. All these different things in nature are fractal-like. It's called self-similarity. Small pieces look like are similar to the whole thing.
I see what you're saying. So in the musical context, what are musical fractals?
Well, some people have tried to write music where there are images of the whole piece at small scales. But when I'm incorporating fractals in the music here, I'm incorporating it as a source of inspiration and to use both lyrically and mathematically in the song.
Right. You're a songwriter.
I am.
You're a mathematician and statistician. You head a department at Dal. You wear a lot of hats.
Right.
How long have you been writing songs?
I've been writing songs since I've been 13, which is about 50 years ago. 50 years in total. And, you know, for a long time, I kept my music separate from my mathematics. When I was an undergraduate at the University of Calgary, I would go to bars at night and play until 1 p.m. And then I came home and caught a little bit of sleep and went to my undergraduate math courses in the morning. And luckily, the first class was calculus, so I could sleep through that. But, you know, I decided to go into mathematics full-time at the end of my undergraduate degree. I thought it was the safer gig. But over the last 20 years, I've combined my mathematics with my music and my songwriting, and it gives me a different viewpoint to look at music.
In what way?
I more explicitly look at the patterns in music. A lot of the things that we love to hear and that songwriters use is the use of patterns to set expectations and either meet those expectations or thwart them. So music is an alternation often between stability and instability, between tension and release.
Mm-hmm.
And mathematics is the way that songwriters do it, even if they're not aware of the mathematics. So if a musician sets up an expectation of what the next note will be or what the next sequence of notes will be, they have a choice there, and they can either meet that expectation and everybody goes, ah, or they intentionally don't, and they create even a little bit more tension. And I think being a mathematician, I'm more explicitly aware of that and the choices that I can make as a songwriter.
We've got a song that we're going to play. Or I should say we've got segments of your song, and we're going to dissect it a little bit. But the song is called "One More Part of Me." Correct?
Right.
Let's listen to the intro to that song. What should we keep in mind as we're listening to this mathematically?
The intro is just a sequence of chords. It might come from any folk rock song, but they're reflected throughout the verses, and a permutation of them, a reordering of them, is used in the chorus. And so that creates that kind of commonality between the chorus and the verses, and yet by redoing the order, it creates some interest.
Okay, let's give it a listen. One thing that jumps out at me from that is that it's very tight. You're very locked in there. Are you playing all the instruments?
I'm playing all the guitars on there. There's a few guitars in the mix there, and I'm playing bass on it.
Right.
The drummer is the sound engineer, Scott Ferguson, who helped record it.
It sounds really good.
Thank you.
It sounds very poppy and catchy, and I can hear patterns there.
Right.
How many chords are you using?
There's mainly four chords in there. And that was the way the song started.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the chord progression? If we can get nerd out a bit on this a little bit.
Sure. It's A minor, C, G, and F. And if you listen, there's little patterns there that I put in a guitar. So on the G chord, I have a da-da-da-da. There's a little suspension on it. And then I echo that on the F chord that comes afterwards, but I've chosen different notes. So there's a commonality between choosing exactly the same rhythmic pattern on the two chords and yet varying the scale degrees that I'm using. Now, this is a lot of tech talk, but in the end, it's how it sounds. And I think it sounds like it fits together, and yet there's a certain amount of tension in it.
Now, pop songs are generally pretty formulaic, even though you were talking earlier about how music wants to either repeat those patterns and so you know what to expect, or sometimes to surprise you. Generally, though, would you say that pop songs are pretty formulaic?
They can be. A songwriter and music producer named Max Martin, who has co-written a lot of Justin Timberlake's, Miley Cyrus's, and Taylor Swift songs over the last 20 or 30 years, very successful. And he has something he calls his melodic math, which are principles that he goes by in deciding whether a song's going to be a hit.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know exactly what his melodic math is, but there's a suspicion that it must be quite useful because he's had a lot of hits.
Yeah. And so why do these pop songs, written the way they do by people who know that kind of melodic math, why do they engage us so personally and so powerfully?
Well, that's the key that people would think. You know, I've had a lot of people who over the years have written to me because of my various research involving mathematics and music, in particular the music of the Beatles, that have been upset. They've been angry because they feel if I say there's mathematics in music, then I'm saying music is not creative and it's more calculations. But unfortunately, that's been their experience growing up, going through school, as to how mathematics has been taught.
Mm-hmm.
That's been taught as memorize, do calculations, and that's the extent of it. That's not mathematics.
Mathematics is
hugely creative. It's recognizing patterns when they occur, and it's managing those patterns and managing expectations.
Okay, let's get back to your tune. Right now, we don't often play music this way, but this is an exception. We're dissecting this song. Here is the first verse.
They say it takes compromise. It matters of the heart. There must be give and take. So I played my part. At every fork in the road, I let you decide. You're always at the wheel. I'm just along for the ride. What have I given up? Losing one more part of me. How long can I go on before there's nothing left? Part of me.
That is verse one of One More Part of Me, written by Jason Brown. Jason Brown is my guest. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Dalhousie University, longtime music writer, fan, performer. What is it about, how are musicians like yourself able to take those four chords, three majors and a minor, and make them so unique and yet, very different, but memorable, and I guess in some ways very similar too?
Right. And, you know, I think that's the attraction of the music, that it can be similar and yet interesting at the same time. And I think things like permuting the order of the chords, changing the order of the chords, changing the lengths of the chords. You can stretch things out, adding extra notes on top of the chords to create tensions. And certain notes, you know, are observed to create tensions with the chords. But sometimes those tensions are created by the physics of sound, you know, and the scales that we choose. So all those things go in. Now, musicians tend to do that all automatically after they've learned it, but their brains are acting mathematical, even if they don't recognize any mathematics in it.
Do you like the Beatles?
I love the Beatles. And I'm just going to read to you a quote. Someone wrote, "If you listen to the great Beatles records, the earliest ones, where the lyrics are incredibly simple, why are they still beautiful? Well, they're beautifully sung, beautifully played, and the mathematics in them is elegant." So who do you think, what mathematician do you think might have written that, said it?
Let me see. Of all the mathematicians I know, I have no, I'd only be guessing.
Well, I was misleading you. It's the boss, Bruce Springsteen.
No way.
Yes, he said that in 2009. And it's an indication that he not only recognized that there was mathematics in the Beatles' music, but it's elegant. And that shows me a certain kind of perception about mathematics and its role in music, that the mathematics that he hears is elegant.
It is elegant. It's also interesting that Paul McCartney is a fantastic piano player, musician, all a bass player. He doesn't read music.
Right. You know, and yet that didn't hamper him in any way. I mean, he had George Martin, the producer,
I guess,
able to transcribe whatever needed to be transcribed and orchestrated. But Paul McCartney's brain, you know, I can see is very mathematical, but at the high end of the creativity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at a song like Yesterday, and there are so many patterns in there, and they're so interesting. And yet you look on the other hand, and you look at some of George Harrison's guitar work and his songs, and he loved doing something that Chuck Berry loved to do, which is playing patterns of threes against the patterns of fours. And it was such an interesting thing for Chuck Berry to do while he did his lead guitar work, is that he would do his famous duck walk and go across the stage because it moved him emotionally.
Yeah.
And to figure out in your brain subconsciously how many patterns of threes equals patterns of fours you can get out of it is a least common multiple calculation that he did automatically. He knew four patterns of threes were exactly three patterns of fours. They both add up to 12. And he would do that.
Huh.
And he would be able to exit it seamlessly because of the math. But of course, he wasn't a mathematician, but that didn't stop him from thinking mathematically subconsciously.
You told one of my colleagues that you sometimes get hate mail from musicians. Why?
I do, because, you know, again, it comes down to how mathematics has been introduced to them and taught to them over the years. And it's taught to them as something that will take away from creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the opposite of creativity. And they should have been taught a long time ago that mathematics is just one way of being more creative. It's just a different avenue. And it's even something that you could use to create emotion. There's a notion in music of called prosody, where the lyrics and the music match one another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very powerful thing.
What do you think when you hear people talk about or even use AI to make music?
I have a few friends who've gotten into that quite a bit recently, and it's getting very, very good. The quality of the music created with backup vocals and melody lines just given a set of lyrics is quite impressive. But I think AI is going to give you more of what you're hearing.
It's not going to give you Paul McCartney.
It's not going to give you a Paul McCartney. It's not going to give you a Bob Dylan. It's not going to give you a James Taylor kind of music. And to me, you know, my goal when writing a song is to write a good song. It's not to write a hit song. And I'm after something new. I try never to write the same song twice. And that means looking for different inspiration and looking for different avenues. And for instance, so here in my song, the inspiration came from fractals. And, you know, I don't know anyone else who's used that. And yet it's hidden in the background because one of the one type of fractal is called the Cantor set. And it's where you take an interval from 0 to 1, all the real numbers, and you keep chopping out the middle third. And for those, you're left with two parts and so on. In the end,
you get the first and the fifth.
I'm sorry?
You get the first and the fifth when you take out the middle third?
Right. And you keep doing this. Eventually, you just end up in the infinite limit, which is what you do in mathematics. A whole bunch of infinitely many points, and yet they cover no area. And so this song came from that idea. I thought about losing yourself in a relationship as you give more and more yourself away.
We're coming up to news time. Speaking of math, we got 15 seconds left. Lovely to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Great. Thanks so much, Preston.
Jason Brown is professor and chair of the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Dalhousie.